Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, folks, and welcome to the Tattered Cover. It's wonderful to see such a big turnout tonight. We're very pleased to welcome best-selling author James Ellroy with his new book, Blood's a Rover. James is the author of the L.A. Quartet novels, as well as many other best-selling mysteries and a critically acclaimed memoir. In a New York Times interview, he described himself as, "I am a master of fiction. I am also the greatest crime novelist who ever lived. I am to the crime novel in specific what Tolstoy is to the Russian novel and what Beethoven is to music." And I hear he's a big fan of Beethoven. But I do want to add that many of our staff here at the store feel that he is one of the greatest writers of prose ever. So we're fortunate to have him and to introduce his new novel, The Last in the Underworld Trilogy. So let's welcome him.
T.S. Eliot wrote, "If you came this way, starting from anywhere, at any time and in any season, it would always be the same. You would have to put off sense and notion. You are not here to instruct yourself or to inform curiosity or to carry report. You are here to kneel where prayer has been proven valid." And for me, James Ellroy, the death dog of American literature, what better place to bow my head in prayer and kneel than in a bookstore where words on paper contained between hard covers, outgunned cyberspace, internet pornography, and the internet invaders. Anne Sexton wrote, my friend, I was born doing reference work in sin and born confessing it. This is what poems are, with mercy for the greedy. They are the tongue's wrangle, the world's pottage, the rat's star. Tonight you get the pottage, you get the wordage, and I hit you to my star. Tonight we traverse 94 years of American history, and the history of the guy who becomes a defining American novelist, and the world's only mystical, prescient, prophesying, talking, immortal dog. It's the story of a tall, skinny dog and a little boy who grew up to be a tall, skinny man. And it starts in 1915 when Alfred A. Knopf and his wife Blanche formed the greatest publishing house in world history, appropriately titled Alfred A. Knopf. And they thought they needed a leg up, and they had a Borzoi dog. And he was a bat-eared, beady-eyed, slope-snouted, malodorous, lawn-shitting, crotch-sniffing, leg-humping, toilet-drinking, misanthropic, cat-chomping motherfucker. But they loved him, and they made him their symbol. The cocksucker went mad behind it in 1915. He drank. He used drugs. He hung out after the Great War with Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas in Paris and drank absinthe. He ran with the bulls with Hemingway in Pamplona and got his canine ass gored. He suffered through the Great Depression, but he had big bucks because entertainment booms during bad, bad economic times. He went through the big war, the post-war boom, the post-war malaise, and then he started having visions. And here's what he saw. The motherfucking internet invaders. Cyberspace, internet porn, which would destroy sexuality between human beings because people would be jerking off for a $1.98 looking at their internet screens. He saw all this shit happening years in the future. He saw the Kindle coming. He saw the decline of the printed word, and he saw his dough going out the door. And he didn't dig it. And then, on the dark, cold winter night of March 4th, 1948, a star shone on Wilshire Boulevard above Good Samaritan Hospital in L.A. when a good-looking red-headed nurse from the Wisconsin boonies named Jean Hilliker and a hunky Homeric hung drifter from Lynn, Massachusetts, named Elroy, gave birth to a little baby boy. Those fuckers met, they sizzled, they shacked, they did the dirty dog deed, and at some point after my birth, I think they got married. Me and my mom and dad, they hot-footed it across the street to the Pacific Dining Car Bar, left me alone in my crib, and I started having visions. Women! Literary glory, booze, dope. Women, literary glory, booze, dope. Crime, crazy mystical shit. Women, booze, dope. Literary glory. And this big. And then I hear paw falls coming into my hospital room. And the click, click, click of claws. And before you know it, a Borzoi dog has his paws up on the edge of my crib, and he says to me, "Brother, the printed word be flying high right now, but I foresee some dastardly shit happening 60 years down the line. Internet pornography, hyperkinetic entertainment, the decline of the printed word coupled with a stock market dump, and I see only one motherfucker on earth who can resurrect the printed word in all its forms, and that be you, brother." I looked up at him and I said, "Get your paws off my crib, you furry cocksucker. I got a lot of living to do first." So the dog slunk out of there. I went about my merry way. I wasn't good at shit. My parents got married. My dad taught me to read when I was three. It was the only precocity I ever evinced. Mom and Dad split the sheets when I was seven. And 3 years later, on June 22nd, 1958, my mother was murdered outside Los Angeles. And it's been an unsolved crime for 51 years. And her death hotwired me to sex and death and psychopathology and the secret history of Los Angeles, and later, the secret history of America, and I began to see that there were two, three, four, exponentially more than that, versions of all alleged historical events, and it was the only precocity I ever evinced. So, I went about my twisted way. Women, booze, dope, crazy visions of literary glory, broke into houses and sniffed women's undergarments, did county jail time, cleaned up when I was 29, wrote some good books, some better books, some near great books, some mini masterpieces, some mega masterpieces. And in 1995, L.A. got to be too small for me, and I wrote the first volume of the Underworld USA trilogy, American Tabloid. was Time Magazine's Novel of the Year, 1995. Would Time Magazine shit you? Maybe. After that, in 2001, my big book of the American 1960s, The Cold 6000, was published. Man, oh man, a Shevitz. L.A. Times' Best Book of the Year. New York Times' Notable Book of the Year. Would those august publications shit you? Perhaps. But they weren't great enough. I hadn't quite heeded the Borzoi's call. A.E. Hausman wrote, "Clay lies still, but blood's a rover. Breath's aware that will not keep. Up, lad, when the journey's over, there'll be time enough for sleep." That epigram describes the lives of bad men in love with strong women, deep political conversion, America from 1968 to 1972, a web of conspiracy, retribution, the clash of ideals, and the extremity of love. I'm here to hawk it. I'm here to save literacy. I'm here to answer the most invasively over personal questions that each and every one of you peepers, prowlers, better ass bends, panty sniffers, punks, and pimps has for me. And I'm here to sell you a fuckload of books. Tonight I'm going to read two short passages. Then you can ask me questions. All right? Worship the Borzoi. If you buy 10 copies of this book, you get a front row seat in heaven. You get to meet the Borzoi, me, Beethoven, my mother. Right? You also get to have unlimited sex with each and every person you lusted for while you were on earth, with absolutely no adultery, no negative ramifications, and no STDs. And you would all be a bunch of dumb motherfuckers if you didn't buy 10 copies of this book each. Here it is, cats. Blood's a rover. America. I window peeped 4 years of our history. It was one long mobile stakeout and kick the door in shakedown. I had a license to steal and a ticket to ride. I followed people. I bugged and tapped and caught big events in ellipsis. I remained unknown. My surveillance links the then to the now in a never-before-revealed manner. I was there. My reportage is buttressed by credible hearsay and insider tattle. Massive paper trails provide verification. This book derives from stolen public files and usurped private journals. It is the sum of personal adventure and 40 years of scholarship. I am a literary executor and an agent provocateur. I did what I did and saw what I saw and learned my way through to the rest of the story. Scripture, pure veracity, and scandal rag content. That conjunction gives it its sizzle. You carry the seed of belief within you already. You recall the time this narrative captures and sense conspiracy. I am here to tell you that it is all true and not at all what you think. You will read with some reluctance and capitulate in the end. The following pages will force you to succumb. I am going to tell you everything. Chapter 122, Los Angeles, 32972. Red Fox said, "Scotty was fucking a porcupine. I got to tell you motherfuckers that it was a female porcupine, so I don't see nothing perverted in it." Yuck, yuck, the crowd laughed, misty-eyed. "Some coons off Scotty. Let's get zorched and mourn." The Wheelman lot, early Christmas lights and plaid bunting, booze and jelly bean jar pharmaceuticals. You gots to love it. Crutch, Clyde, Buzz, Phil Irwin and Chick Weiss. Milt C. on stage with Red Fox and Junkie Monkey. Ex-Governor Pat Brown and numerous pigs. 14 Black Panthers. A colored heist guy turned TV evangelist. Frau Scotty and six of his girlfriends. Red Fox said, "Scotty popped my ass for a jump change to 11. I stole 6 moon pies, 4 bags of pork cracklings, a case of T-Bird, and 10 cartons of Cool King Size. Scotty saw that I had soul and let me live. We consumed all that motherfucking shit on the premises and went out looking for bitches." Yuck. Yuck, we're grief-struck, but it's fun. Frau Scotty passed a joint to girlfriend number 4. Girlfriend number 5 nibbled a hash brownie. Red Fox said, "Scotty was searching for this brother named Cleophas. Cleophas was a stick-up man and a booty bandit. He was robbing liquor stores with a sawed-off shotgun and banging Scotty's bitches with a piece of hard black steel 10 times that size." Girlfriend number 3 roared. Girlfriend number 2 hugged Frau Scotty. Phil Irwin popped a quaalude in the air. Chick Weiss popped it with his mouth. Governor Pat Brown blinked and thought, "Why am I here?" Cats, it's a book for the whole family. If the name of your family is the Manson family. Does anyone want to ask me why I write? In my art of sullen craft, exercised in the still night, when only the moon rages and the lovers lie abed with all their griefs in their arms, I labor by singing light, not for the strut and trade of charms upon the ivory stages, but for the common wages of their most secret heart. Not for the proud man apart do I write on these spindrift pages, but for the lovers, their arms round the griefs of the ages, who pay no praise or wages, nor heed my art. Her craft. Dylan Thomas, thank you for coming.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.